On Sunday afternoons, we have been working our way through the Sermon on the Mount. And now we come to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24. And this is another section of the sermon where there's a transition from the previous section that we've been talking about. Matthew 6, 1 through 18 is this big section about hypocrisy. And so we spent one lesson on each of the subjects that Jesus talked about: giving, praying, and fasting. But now we come to a section of the sermon that has to do with money, possessions, and perspective. And it'll take us at least a couple of lessons to get through that. But today's text is Matthew 6, verses 19 to 24. And I know that Jack just read it, but it won't hurt us to read it again. And so let's go ahead and do that. Matthew 6, beginning in verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. There's a very clear theme here as Jesus warns his disciples about the dangers of greed and materialism. And he does that using three different images. He talks about what your treasure is, what your eye is, and what your master is. So he talks about your treasure, your eye, and your master. And those will be the three sections of this sermon. We'll talk about your treasure, your eye, and your master. So first, let's start with verses 19 to 21. Again, Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. These are very familiar verses. The Sermon on the Mount is filled with familiar verses that people have often heard. The real question is, what do they mean? And here, it's clear that Jesus is teaching us something about our priorities. And he's reasoning with us on the basis of what's permanent, what lasts. He looks around and he says to his disciples, why do people care so much about things that are destined to pass away? It just doesn't really make any sense when you think about it. Why do you care so much about the things that are only temporary? What difference does it make how big a pile of stuff you can accumulate for yourself if in the end you lose all of it? See? Heavenly treasures are infinitely more important than earthly treasures because heavenly treasures are the only ones that you get to keep. And I think the logic there is very simple. It really just makes a lot of sense. In fact, it's very similar to the logic that we see in the book of Ecclesiastes. Remember what the preacher observed about materialism and earthly pursuits? As he looked around at all of these different things that people and he himself could try to find satisfaction and fulfillment in, his conclusion is vanity of vanities. All is vanity. All is striving after wind. No matter how much you get, it will never be enough. And even if you do get everything that you thought that you wanted, you'll probably find that it's not as satisfying as you hoped it would be. And even if it is satisfying for a period of time, eventually you lose it all. And somebody else will get the stuff that you worked so hard to accumulate for yourself. If the bugs don't eat it, if the rust doesn't destroy it, if the thieves don't steal it, then eventually death will separate you from it all the same. And so because it is impossible to find true satisfaction or security in what's earthly, heavenly treasure ought to be our priority. Now, I don't think any of that is too hard to follow. I don't think any of that is too difficult of logic. So why do we struggle with materialism? I mean, if we understand this concept intellectually, why would greed or materialism be a temptation for us at all? Well, it's because the reality is none of us actually live our lives purely on the basis of intellectual reasoning. Nobody does that. I had a lot of cake this weekend. But let me tell you, it wasn't because I thought that cake was healthy for me. You know, it wasn't like I miscalculated and thought like, oh, this will actually be good for me. No, it wasn't a miscalculation. It was a deliberate choice that I made. Because there were some things, at least in the moment, that were more important to me than being healthy. I wanted the cake more than I wanted to be healthy, at least for a moment. And the truth is that when we make decisions, and particularly when we make bad decisions, it's usually not because we don't know better. It's not because we've miscalculated. It's not because there's some fault in our logic. It's because we didn't choose better. We made the wrong choice. And Jesus helps us to understand why we make the choices that we make. The problem isn't with our logic or with our calculations. It's with our hearts. Jesus helps us to understand that your heart is actually the center of who you are. Your heart is what is ultimately in control of the decisions that you make. Your heart is ultimately what is in control of your whole life. It's the center of who you are. It controls your logic. It controls your emotions. And it even controls your will. And so Jesus is teaching us that our priorities in life are really a product of where our heart is at. I want you to look very closely at what Jesus says in verse 21. His conclusion to this first subsection is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Notice that he says, it's where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's not where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. I think the point there is Jesus is not saying you need to figure out where your heart is and then you'll know where your treasure is. It's just the opposite. Jesus says if you figure out where your treasure is, then you'll know where your heart is. If you look at the decisions that you're actually making in life, if you look at the priorities that you have, if you look at where you are putting value and worth, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. And ultimately, it doesn't matter how much Bible you know or how much you understand about what the Bible teaches. That isn't ultimately the deciding factor about the decisions that you make. The deciding factor is where your heart is. And so if we want to know where our heart is, we ought to be able to look at our own lives, follow the treasure, find out where your priorities are, look at the decisions that you're actually making, and the location of your treasures will tell you a lot about the location of your heart. Now, the next section emphasizes just how serious of an evaluation this is for us. Because in verse 22, Jesus shifts the metaphor a little bit, and he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness. So now Jesus compares the function of the heart to the function of the eye. And I think the point is this. your heart is what determines the whole course of your life. Your heart is the eye that is inside of you. Just like your eye determines the whole course of your body, your heart determines the whole course of your life. That's how serious it is. And some of you know just how important eyesight is. If you're somebody that had better eyesight in the past and then realized that you needed a little bit of assistance to be able to see as good as you used to see, you know what a detriment it was to your life to have a bad eye or an unhealthy eye. If you can't see where you're going, you're going to be causing yourself a lot of problems. You're going to be not able to recognize people. You'll be bumping into things. You'll be hurting yourself. You'll be making all kinds of mistakes. You'll be confused. Your eye determines the whole course of your body. And what Jesus is saying is that your heart is the eye of your life. If your eye is healthy, then you have confidence. You can see the path ahead. You know where the pitfalls are. You can avoid the traps and the things that you might bump into and hurt yourself. You recognize what you need to recognize so that you can make good choices. And Jesus is teaching us that if our heart is good, it'll be a blessing to our lives, just like good eyesight is a blessing to our bodies. We can move through life with confidence, with purpose. We know where we're headed. We can avoid the pitfalls that bad eyesight or a bad heart would cause us to fall into. And so if your heart is set on earthly things, it will have a negative impact on your entire life. If you let your heart fixate on the things of this life, if you let greed and materialism take root inside of you, it'll cause you all kinds of problems. You'll stumble through life feeling lost and afraid. You'll always be wanting more and you'll never be satisfied. You'll live with the constant insecurity of losing the things that you already have. And deep down, you'll be haunted by the inevitable reality of death coming to take it all. And that's a miserable way to live. But Jesus is teaching us that that is what happens to your life when your heart is set on earthly things. And the reason why is because when those things are threatened, if your heart is fixed on your money, or for that matter, your health, or your beauty, or your youth, or your popularity, or whatever earthly kind of thing it might be, when that thing is threatened, it's not just that thing that's threatened. It's your whole life that's threatened. It's your whole identity that's threatened. And so if your heart is set on earthly things, losing earthly things means losing everything. But the other side is also true. That if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. Jesus says, if the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? But the opposite is also true. If the light in you is light, how great is the light? If your heart is set on heavenly things, if you learn to treasure the things of heaven, if you learn to let those things be what your heart is truly fixed on, you will have joy in whatever circumstances you go through. You'll have peace. You'll have contentment. You'll be generous. Because being parted from earthly things isn't the end of everything for you. You have a perspective that allows you to go through hard times. It allows you to even make voluntary sacrifices of the things that you might have. You'll have courage to go through whatever life confronts you with. When your heart is set on heavenly things, nothing is a threat anymore. You know, the moths and the rust and the thieves, they can do their worst. They can take everything because the things that they can't touch are the things that are eternal. And when your heart is set on heavenly things, even death loses its sting. Death can only take what's earthly. It can't touch what's eternal. And so what Jesus is teaching us is that there's a secret to going through life with confidence. There's a secret to going through life with purpose, with courage. And the secret is, have your heart set on heavenly things. When you do that, it doesn't matter how dark your surroundings get. It doesn't matter what kind of suffering or hardship or loss that you might go through. You might grieve, but you won't be overcome by grief. You can be beat down, but not destroyed. You can be crushed, but not driven to despair. And so you can go through times of intense loss without being overcome by them when you learn to set your heart on heavenly things. And so, Jesus takes these two teachings and moves them forward into a third image. And really what he does in this one is he puts the choice in front of us and says, now you have to choose. In verse 24, he says, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. The choice between two masters is really the same choice as the choice between two treasures or two eyes. It's the choice of where does your heart belong? Who does your heart belong to? And Jesus makes it clear that you can only choose one. The warning here is much stronger than don't serve God and money. It's much stronger than you shouldn't serve God and money. What Jesus states, he states as absolute fact, you cannot serve God and money. You have to pick one or the other. And the word money here is actually the word mammon. It's an Aramaic word. Some translations retain that mammon word from the original Aramaic language. It's a word that includes money, but it also includes property and possessions in general. Jesus is talking about all of those earthly things that we might choose to put our confidence in, the things that we might choose to serve, the things that we might choose to dedicate the course of our lives to serving. And so it might be money, it might be power, it might be health, it might be popularity. Jesus says, if that is your master, then you've made the choice that God is not. But if your confidence is truly in God, if your loyalty is truly to God, then it can't be to any of those things any longer. And the reason why is because Jesus is talking about a slave's relationship to his master. And I know that that's a little bit of a foreign concept for us today, but it's much stronger than, say, a friend's relationship to his friends. You know, you can have more than one friend. You can even have more than one best friend. You know, sometimes we have to remind our kids of that. You can have more than one best friend. You can have lots of friends. You can have lots of acquaintances. You can even have more than one job sometimes. You know, you can juggle having multiple jobs if you have to, as hard as that is. But a slave can only have one master. There can only be one who is the one that is ultimately in control. When there's a conflict, when there's some kind of difference between what one wants and what another wants, you have to choose one or the other. Jesus tells us that you can only be truly devoted to one thing. You will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. And that's just simply the way it works. I thought of an illustration, so we'll see if it works. Imagine that you work in a restaurant, and you have two different managers at this restaurant. And your job is to make clam chowder. That's your job at the restaurant. You are the clam chowder cook. And let's say that you come in for work one day, and you get all of the ingredients out to make a big pot for the day, and you notice that the heavy cream is a few days past its expiration date. So you smell it, and you think about it, and you're not really sure what to do about it. But then, manager one walks in, and you ask him what to do. And the first manager says, well, I guess we're not going to have any clam chowder today. You just need to get rid of all of that, throw it out. There's just not going to be any clam chowder today. And so you start to get all of the cartons together, and you start to get ready to throw them out. And manager one walks out of the kitchen, and manager two walks in. And he sees you getting ready to throw away all of this expired cream, and he says, what are you doing? And you say, well, that's a couple days past its expiration date. And he says, no, we're not going to waste all of this. Just go ahead and make it. Once it's all cooked, nobody will ever know the difference. And then he walks out of the kitchen too. What do? You can't serve two masters. You've got two managers who are trying to make demands of you, and they are mutually exclusive. You've got to choose one or the other. You will be devoted to the one, and you will hate the one and love the other. You will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You have to choose one of the two. Either you're going to think, I'm so glad manager one cares about our customers. He cares about the well-being of others. I'm going to do what he says. Or you're going to say, I'm so glad manager two doesn't want to waste all this money, and he's so frugal. But either way, you'll do what one of them says and not what the other says. And Jesus is teaching us that that is exactly the way our hearts work. There will be times in life where we are confronted with choices in which we have to decide who our master truly is. There will be times when competing desires, competing interests, competing endeavors will present us with choices that are mutually exclusive. And it all comes down to this choice. Will your master be God or mammon? There'll be times when you have to choose to either be honest or dishonest, to share your resources or to hoard them up, to take from others or to give and make personal sacrifices. And only you can decide who your master is. The way Jesus concludes this section in verse 24 reminds me of another story in the Bible. It reminds me of a different Jesus who presented people with a similar choice many, many years before this sermon was preached. Except you don't know him by the name Jesus. You know him by a different translation of his name. Jesus is the English translation of the name in Greek, but the English translation of the same name in Hebrew is the name Joshua. And in Joshua chapter 24, verses 13 to 15, Joshua stands before the people of Israel, and he presents them with a choice. Speaking for God in verse 13, he says, I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities that you had not built, and you dwell in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua looked at all of the blessings that God had given to the people of Israel. And like God, he knew that they would be tempted to put their confidence in those things, to turn to the false gods, or maybe even to turn to materialism itself, to serve the creation rather than the creator, to serve the gifts rather than the giver, to serve mammon rather than God. And like Joshua, many years later, Jesus looks at his disciples and says, "Choose this day whom you will serve." Whether it's these false gods, whether it's these idols, whether it's this stuff, or whether it is the living God who gave it all to you. But you must choose one and only one. I really appreciated the songs that Rob picked out this afternoon. I thought they were very fitting. And we actually didn't talk about it at all, but that song, "Take My Life and Let It Be," has such powerful sentiments as we think about our relationship with God. What's really curious to me is that in almost every songbook, including ours, there's a verse that's left out of that song. And it says, "Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. Take my intellect and use every power as thou shalt choose. Every power as thou shalt choose." For some reason, it's easy for us to think about all of the grandiose ways that we might serve God. "Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee." What a wonderful sentiment that is. But what Jesus does in the Sermon on the Mount is he brings it down home to us and says, if that's the way you really feel, then you can't leave that verse out either. "Take my silver, take my gold, not a mite would I withhold." When we choose to serve the Lord instead of mammon, it means that every blessing that he gives us is a blessing that we're able to hold with a loose grip. It's a blessing that we're able to use in his service. And the more that we are willing to entrust ourselves entirely to him, the more we reap the blessings of having a pure heart that's set on heavenly things, of having treasure laid up in heaven that moth and rust and thieves can't touch, of having light in us that allows us to go through periods of intense darkness, because we have a master who will always take care of us. There may be somebody here this afternoon who realizes that you have not made the decision to surrender everything to the Lord. I've got to tell you, that's a decision that you make one time and you keep having to grapple with the old ways coming back. And so as we sing this song, I hope that all of us will think about all of the things that God has given to us, how we have chosen to surrender all of them to him and his service, knowing that he loves us and cares for us. And if there's somebody here that has not yet become a Christian, or somebody who needs to confess some kind of sin or ask for prayers or help, now's an opportunity that you can share that as well. But as we sing this song, let's think about the blessings that come from surrendering all to Jesus. And if there's somebody here that we could help, we invite you to come to the front while we stand together and sing.